Facebook turned over 3,000 Russia-linked ads to congressional investigators this week. The social media giant recently shared details on the ads and posts as investigators look into Russian interference in the 2016 election. Investigators believe Russians who posed as Americans on Facebook were part of a Kremlin-linked propaganda group to spread disinformation. Facebook executive Joel Kaplan said that the accounts posted content that amplified divisive issues across the political spectrum. About 10 million people are believed to have seen the ads. Amy Webb is a professor of strategic foresight at New York University and a futurist who researches emerging technology. Amy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi there, how are you?
Pretty good. Well, Amy, can you give us a sense of what kind of content was posted by these users?
So that's the unusual thing. I think if, you know, we think about Russia using Facebook almost as a weapon against the United States, our thoughts might move into directions of stealing data or posting a ton of fake news. That's pretty obvious. The reality, though, was that a lot of the fake accounts and the fake groups were much more insidious. There were groups established for people who like dogs. So it was like a whole dog owners group. And, the, you know, it was very innocuous. So people who are pet owners who love to post photos of their dogs, right? I mean, what could be the harm in that? In that case, that particular account, it accrued quite a few members. They didn't start posting any obviously political content, but it was just a matter of time. But there were other cases. Shortly after the Freddie Gray tragedy in Baltimore, there was a account that started called Blacktivist, and it was aggressively trying to organize protests within the city of Baltimore. Now, what's interesting in that case is that I live in Baltimore, and so after that, after that tragedy, what's so interesting is that the city of Baltimore really did come together, and there was an active movement within the city against protests. Because, you know, the city was trying to sort of keep things together. And by city, I mean citizens of the city, not at a governmental level. And so this account was going around trying to incite violence within the city of Baltimore to the point where the Reverend Heber Brown, who's a local, very, very well-known and very, very well-respected preacher in the city of Baltimore, kind of got into an argument with this account saying, hey, you know, I don't know where all this, organizing is coming from. We are organized for peace, not for protest. Are you an outsider? Where are you from? And whoever was in charge of that page said, well, yeah, I'm somebody who supports the cause. I don't live in Baltimore. But pretty quickly it became apparent that the person was not a native English speaker, although, you know, not everybody was paying attention. So these two, the page for dog lovers and the page that was, I guess, supposed to incite protests in Baltimore, they don't seem like they have a direct link to the election, right? And that's what a lot of the concern is right now. However, they fit this pattern of widespread social unrest and confusion. And so there have been hundreds upon hundreds of different accounts that have been created on Facebook, groups that have been created on Facebook, but the same thing is happening on Twitter. And the goal is to confuse people, to pit people against each other, and in general to cause a sense of anxiety and unease.
And is this something that investigators have now put their finger on? Has it stopped now at this point?
So that's a great question. Who investigates, right? I mean, it could be argued that, in a sense, you know, Facebook is the largest intelligence agency on the planet. And, you know, that would rival the CIA, and that might even rival the KGB. And it's powerful because we are willingly inserting all of our private details and all of our data into the service. The question is, who oversees that service? So, there were folks within the State Department about a year ago who were looking into some of this. There were people within our different law enforcement agencies who, on the fringes, had heard that maybe something like this was possible and people had started looking into it. But we don't have a single sort of oversight body that sort of tracks these gray areas, right? Because technically, did Facebook break a law by allowing people from Russia to buy ads targeting Americans with misinformation? You know, the answer is no. However, we see now the second, third, fourth order, you know, implications that have resulted, you know, in the wake of all of this. So that's a good question. You know, which law enforcement agency has been looking into it? And the answer is, you know, there isn't a single one, and there isn't also a coordinated effort.
It's believed that over 10 million people saw some of these ads, and they didn't just come before the election. Many of them came after the election as well, a little more than half from what I've seen. But is there a sense of what kind of influence the ads had?
Sure. You know, and again, nobody has the data. Facebook claims that it itself doesn't necessarily have all the data, which I find fascinating. But 10 million to me seems like a gross, you know, if it really is only 10 million people, then either Facebook has been grossly over-reporting the numbers of people using the system, or that is a gross understatement. I think what's far more likely is that there were many, many more people who at some point or another saw either the kind of ad or the kind of post that we've been talking about, or something that came from what would appear to be a reputable agency. So there are a lot of people who share posts from a website called RT, and the RT logo is green. My sister, a couple months ago, sent me, it was something about Viking cats, Viking kitties, and it was a story about scientists had discovered cats came over with the Vikings. And if you were a cat person, this was a great story for you. Except that it came from Russia Today. Russia Today is widely believed to be a arm of the Russian government, a propaganda arm. And, you know, they have plenty of content now on television. They have a website. They act as though they are news organizations. However, a lot of the content that they post is questionable. And, you know, I've seen a ton of Russia Today posts on my Facebook feed. My question is, am I being counted as one of the 10 million who were targeted? And I think that the answer is probably no, right? I'm not being counted, although clearly, you know, I saw some of that content as well.
Talking to Amy Webb right now, professor of strategic foresight at NYU, and she researches how technology will transform the way we live. And we're talking about Facebook having alleged Russian profiles, posting many ads seeming to be aimed at creating a sense of political division and unrest, maybe undermining democracy in the United States. And looking at whatever goal that Russians might have had to disrupt, to sow seeds of chaos and distrust, is it looking as though they were successful in that aim or are currently?
Right. So, you know, the challenge, this is where things get really complicated. So, you know, I went to summer camp in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, because I'm originally from the Midwest. And at the time that I went to summer camp, my parents sent me copies of the Chicago Tribune. There weren't a lot of other ways to get news. You know, the challenge in the year 2017 is that news comes from every direction. And it took news organizations quite a while to figure out how to get folks to keep paying for content, because it costs money to create quality journalism, you know, and quality journalism used to not just be available for free everywhere. The challenge is that news organizations dragged their heels, never really came up with a sustainable business model. And so in the wake of that, we have all of these alternate news sources. Some of them are completely legitimate and credible. Some of them aren't. You know, journalists use a pretty standard formula to write their content, and even at NPR, you know, there are certain ways that you have intros, you have lead-ins, and it's not like these formulas are kept under lock and key. So what's happening is you know, it's easy to parody. That's why the Onion, the people who read the Onion stories, right, the reason they're so funny is because we recognize the formula and it turns the story in a different direction. The other side of that is that you can do the very same thing with news that isn't accurate news but sounds like it might be. And it's become very easy to share all of that on Facebook and on Twitter. And at the same time, news organizations are finally now starting to put up paywalls. So rather than going to your local news website, in my case, you know, where I grew up, the Chicago Tribune, you know, or one of the many fine news organizations in Wisconsin, instead of going to those websites, people are instead sort of looking at the links that are being passed around. And it's not always clear what is fake from what is real. And one of the bigger problems is that, you know, some of these fake news, some of these fake accounts looked as though they were spreading, you know, what seemed to be accurate news reports from what appeared to be legitimate news websites. But if you spent a few minutes, you know, somebody like the with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, right? If you're not from Wisconsin, you don't know that that's the name of the local newspaper. If you're from, I don't know, some other state, let's say Maryland, and you get to something that says the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal, right? A local in Wisconsin would know that that's not the right name, but somebody else wouldn't. And if it looks and feels like the news and it follows that pattern, then people will click. And the problem is that that's where a lot of, that's why this problem is so difficult and it's so complicated. And it's hard to just shut off the tap because it's coming from everywhere.
We're talking with Amy Webb right now. She's a professor at NYU and a futurist who researches emerging technology. And you can tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. Did you see any of the Russia-linked Facebook ads? How much did what you saw on Facebook affect the way that you voted or your political views? And what role do you think Facebook should play in politics? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up our conversation in a little bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Amy Webb. She's a professor at NYU and a futurist who researches emerging technology. We're looking at news that Kremlin-linked ads were part of a coordinated Russian disinformation campaign before and after the election. And you can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Did any of the Russia-linked content on Facebook affect you, at least as far as you know? And do you think Facebook should be doing more to prevent disinformation campaigns designed to sway American politics? And tell us what you think social media giants like Facebook, like Twitter, should have, whether they should have more government oversight. Call us at 800-642-1234. And we'll go to our first caller now. We've got Brad with us in Madison. Brad, hi.
Hi. This is a great topic. I'm very interested in this topic. I'm a psychology professor at a community college, and one of the things that I noticed that I'm sure you've studied a lot is that we just haven't developed the skill set to live in this new kind of information overload society. You know, way back when I grew up, I had to seek information out. I had to go to the library to find it. And now it's coming at everybody all the time. And the students that I work with are just, you know, they're falling into the confirmation bias. There's just so much them that they don't have to know kind of what's right or what's wrong, so they just decide to leave what makes the most sense to them.
Brad, thanks a lot for that comment. I think an insightful one that maybe we haven't, our brains haven't caught up with the technology. Brad says we don't have the skill set yet to deal with the amount of information out there. Do you think that's right, Amy?
Absolutely, it's right. And I'm so happy Brad called in and made that point, because I think what happens is every time we have a new wave of technology or a new generation of people intersecting with information, there's a tendency to sort of say, well, these young kids, they just don't have patience. They just, you know, they're lazy, or any other comment that we've all heard throughout our lifetimes. But Brad brought up a really great point. The key difference in the year 2017 is that the technology that we intersect with in our everyday lives and the volume of information that we have access to through that technology is unprecedented in human history. And the challenge is that we haven't developed the skill set to take in that information as quickly as it's coming to us, and we don't have as much time to sit and think critically and to ask important questions and to be skeptics in a productive way before seeing the next piece of information. And adding to all of this is the chemical effect on our brains. So one of the problems is that every time, for example, if you're on Twitter, every time our president sends out a new tweet, it's always something, regardless of where you fall in the political spectrum, that tweet is always something interesting, right? And in a sense, it acts like a shot of dopamine. And so we tend to click, you know, more and more and more, and we go to that social media feed on Facebook, you know, with increasing frequency because our brains have become accustomed to that hit of dopamine.
So you're saying we're kind of like the rats pressing down on the lever the pellet of reward.
That's absolutely right. And so we have cognitive biases that we've developed that are becoming harder and harder to chase away. And, you know, few people are even aware that they have them, which, again, is why if you saw, for example, on Facebook, the Defend the Second ad, so this was it was published all over Facebook. It was talking about defending the Second Amendment, why you have a gun, why this person has a gun. It was pretty viral and pretty popular. We instinctively either clicked on it and put a heart there, or clicked on it and put an angry face there, or we, you know, shared it with vitriol, or we shared it with huge enthusiasm, in part because of this chemical response. And that was an ad that did not come from the United States. It came from Russia.
I want to take another caller now. And again, thanks to Brad for that. Let's go next to Debbie joining us in Sheboygan. Debbie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think stemming the tide of information on Facebook is going to be very, very, very difficult, if not almost impossible, because of the social network that it is, that there's so many people in the country that are utilizing Facebook and they share all the information, whether it's factual or not factual, without checking to make sure what they're sharing is indeed anything of substance.
Debbie, thank you for that thought. Debbie saying that maybe the horse is already out of the barn. It's hard to get all the information under control at this point. It's used so widely. And that also kind of gets at the question whether how much culpability Facebook has in what happened and what will happen in the future, Amy.
That's right. So to her point, it's not like we can just shut the tap off, right, on a lot of this without turning the network dark. There are technological ways around this. So, you know, Facebook could tweak its algorithm. It could tweak some of the ways that it manages data to prevent, for example, some of these fake ads or most of these fake ads. It could also, and the same thing goes for Twitter. Twitter could, again, by tweaking its algorithm and its technology, could pretty easily stop the proliferation of bots and the spread of fake news. But what we've learned over the past year is that we click, right? We click on this stuff. And so there's a business case, even if there's not a democratic case, there's a business case to keeping a lot of these systems going just as they are right now. Now, to the culpability issue, that's where things get murky. Facebook continues to say that it is just a platform and that, you know, similarly to Amazon, all they're doing is offering the sort of middleware service between consumers and sellers, right? The challenge, however, is that Facebook's algorithm governs what we see when. And I think you could argue easily that that algorithm is performing the same services as an editor. Therefore, for Facebook to continue to say that it's not in the content business, I think, is kind of disingenuous. And so that question of culpability, how could they not be culpable at this point?
I've got a question from Mark in Madison that gets at this. He said, is there a way for social media sites to authenticate these new sites to help people?
So, you know, I think that there is. Earlier in the year, I wrote, I explained all of this in a story on Mother Jones, and it's still online, and you can take a look. And the way to do this would be to add some snippets of code to basically have a spectrum of verification. Because, just as an example, Breitbart News you know, is very much on the right. It's a conservative news site, and sometimes they publish news that's disingenuous. Sometimes they publish news that's factually accurate. It just happens to not be what some people agree with. And the same could be true for news organizations on the far left, MSNBC, for example. You know, they publish content that's factually accurate. It just may not match up with your ideas. So one thing that could be done would be to verify across the globe all credible sources of information. And when it's credible, you get a badge, just like we see verified badges now on Facebook and Twitter. And it gives you a sense. This is a middle-of-the-road publication. This is a right-leaning or left-leaning, but this story is, you know, factually accurate. And to verify it, you don't need lots of humans at Facebook doing this. You just need to go through the process with the news organizations themselves. But it would be a step that would limit, you know, it would limit a lot of this scandalous stuff that we're seeing all over the place. And as a result of that, it would probably limit some of those dopamine hits that we're getting. And it may cause us to click less. So there's possibly a business disincentive here.
Amy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Amy Webb, a professor of strategic foresight at NYU and a futurist who researches emerging technology. She joined us to look at Facebook's involvement in the Russia investigation after news that Russia-linked Facebook ads were part of a disinformation effort. And we'd love to hear more about what you have to say on this. How much blame should Facebook take? Mark Zuckerberg says he wants to unify people, do better. What would doing better look like for Facebook? What do you want to see? And how influenced were you? Are you a little more careful now? You can let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.